dear SMAC community, and welcome back to another episode. And let me tell you, it's a special one. I've had the chance to go back to my university, EHL, and record a live episode during the Young Hoteliers Summit. My guest was no other than Richard Hyde, the COO of Small Luxury Hotels of the World, and we talked, amongst others, about how the definition of luxury travel has changed and what their mystery travelers look out for when reviewing their hotels. But listen for yourself. Enjoy. Thank you, guys. Wow, it's crazy to be back here. So my name is Patricia. I was a student here until 2020. So I graduated in summer 2020, which was a great year to graduate, guys. And I did YHS twice during my studies. So it's an honor to be back. And thank you to the team for another great addition. So today we're going to do a live podcast recording. SMAC Hospitality is a podcast that's been running for 5 seasons. We're Berlin-based. Well, the other three hosts are. I'm from Zurich, so I'm based in Zurich. But I'm really excited to do a live recording for once, because usually we record online, which, as you know, because you all studied online at some point during the last couple of years, is not as fun as live. So today I'm happy to have a real person to be my guest. So let's welcome Richard Hyde to the stage. So just a little bit of housekeeping. So we're going to record the session. And once we are done with the live session recording, we will open the floor for questions. So write down your questions that you have. And once I'm done with mine, the floor is all yours. Okay. So we always start, well, welcome, first of all, Richard.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for being here. Thank you for coming to Lausanne. From London, I think.
No, pleasure to be here. Lovely sunny weather, amazing campus.
Well, we're happy you made the trip. Usually we start the recording with the guest introducing themselves with one little sentence that I taught you an hour ago. So let's hear it.
Okay, so I'm Richard Hyde. I'm Chief Operating Officer for Small Luxury Hotels of the World, based in London. And so welcome to this SMAC episode.
Perfect. Well done. Yes. And we're going to start very easy with an icebreaker question. It's a shame because you already know it, so you had a little bit of time to prepare. But what is the most famous or one of the most famous persons that you've met? And you told me it's a great story, so I'm a bit hyped.
Yeah, that was going to be the second question, but it's not overly prepared. But anyway, I've got two, and then you can decide who is the most famous. So the first one would be, and there's a reason for bringing these two up. It was King Charles. So I met King Charles, who was then Prince Charles, at his home in Highgrove, which is in the Cotswolds. And he was giving an award for sustainability. So at the time, I worked for InterContinental Hotels. And we were leaders in sustainability. We had a caring luxury program, which we shared with all hoteliers. And to my shame, in a way, that was over 30 years ago. That was in 1994, which just goes to show what a leader Prince Charles was in terms of sustainability. So he was ultra charming, really nice person, had a lot to, you know, chatted to everybody. So that left a real impression on me. And the second fairly famous person, and then you can decide between the two, was Donald Trump. So I was having dinner with a friend on the Upper East Side in a Mexican restaurant, and I noticed Donald Trump, and it was about 1992 when New York was fairly quiet. So he was there on his own, I think, with Marla Maples. I think it was his wife number two, I think. Anyway, so we just noticed him. And then I went off to the gents toilet, and there was Donald Trump washing his hands. So I said hi, and he said hi. I didn't shake his hand, but he was perfectly charming. So that's kind of stuck in the mind. So I leave it to you. Who do you think is the more famous person, King Charles or now President Trump?
Well, I could tell you who I'd prefer meeting, but let's not get into politics right now. So thank you very much for sharing those two very good stories, raising the bar to this question. And now let's get a bit more serious, not all too serious, because we are a fun podcast. So most people in the audience might have heard of Small Luxury Sense of the World, but... still, I think it would be great if you could get a little bit of your own spin on it. And I'm actually leading this question because in one interview, you described your company once as the Tinder for hotels. So I would love to get that story behind that sentence.
Yeah, sure. So Small Luxury Hotels of the World is a community or a family or a collection of 650 independently owned hotels. So each hotel is privately owned, usually by a family, maybe second, third generation, by rich individuals who've made their money in property, real estate. We have a few hotels which are management companies. I think yesterday you had a tour from Highgate Hospitality, where we have three or four of their hotels. They're a big management company. So we have the Refinery in New York. But primarily, it's their independent hotels. So our ethos is to put independently minded hotels in touch with independently spirited customers, whether they're the guests who stays in the hotels or travel agents. And travel agents is a hugely important part of the luxury hotel customer journey, if you will. So really, that's kind of where the Tinder came from. You just kind of swipe right. People love new hotels. They love making acquaintances with new hotels, not to be FOMO, not to be left out. They like to know what the best and newest hotels are. So that's really what we do, is to try and put independent hotels amongst the kind of the global audience, whether they're from the USA or whether they're from China. We kind of help hotels in their marketing and sales.
Mm-hmm. And it's about matching the right customer, like the right guest with the right property, right? So I see where the Tinder metaphor comes from.
Yeah, I mean, people are different. I mean, that's what's great about hospitality, and they don't all want the same thing, and they don't want all the same thing all the time. So maybe you're on a trip with your family, you want a slightly different hotel than if you're going away with your wife or your fiance or lover or whatever. So it is different, and we try and offer lots of different varieties, whether it's under canvas in a kind of a tented glamping, like in the United States, to a more traditional hotel in Europe, to a very contemporary hotel in Japan. So we try and offer lots of different experiences across the spectrum. So yeah, that's what we do.
So everyone finds whatever they need at whatever point in their life in your
Absolutely,
collection.
Yeah. Yeah, that's what we try to do. But we do what we say. We're one of the few companies that we do what we say. Small luxury hotels of the world.
The name is the program.
The name is the program. So small can be contemporary, it can be traditional, it can be classical, it can be ultra modern. So, but the key thing is small.
And usually in my episodes that I do for SMAC, I usually ask the guests as well about their own journey. And especially now, I think with this audience here at EHL, where everyone is kind of like finishing maybe their degrees and planning their career and starting out, it's always quite interesting and relevant to see how our guests started. So maybe you can share a little bit about the early days of your career and how you got into the wonderful world of hospitality.
I think it was just by complete accident. I didn't go to hotel school. Maybe I should have done. This is amazing, this place. I actually started I did a degree in advertising and marketing, and I started off in Manchester. Everybody heard of Manchester, Northern England. It kind of rains a lot, has two really good football teams. Well, I did the sponsorship of one of those football teams, which was Manchester United. I worked for a big Japanese company, and they sponsored Man United. So every Saturday I used to have to go to the football ground and watch. At the time was a pretty poor team. I mean, they haven't changed much now, have they? But they did have a very successful period. But when I was there, they were kind of mid-table. So that's how I got into marketing and hospitality, because there was a hospitality section. You used to see more players in there than on the pitch. It was kind of a bit of a drinking culture. And then from there, I just kind of wanted to move away from Manchester. Manchester in the 1980s was a different place to what it is now. It's a really nice city. So I moved down to London, and Rocco Forte offered me a job at Trust House Forte in near Windsor, a place called Slough. I don't know if you've ever met. I mean, it's a terrible name, but it's a very nice place. Anyway, so I worked in the head office for Charles and Rocco Forte. And from there, I just kind of worked and got the bug and continued my career in hospitality. So it's kind of started by accident, but it was a happy accident because I've just loved the last 20 or 30 years. And, you know, you've chosen the right industry to be in. It's great.
I think once you're in, it's hard to get out, right?
Once you're in, yeah. I mean, who doesn't love luxury hotels, boutique hotels? Who doesn't love meeting people? I mean, maybe you don't like meeting people, but maybe you're in the wrong place. But it's a fascinating industry. It covers everything. It's theater, it's finance, it's marketing, and it kind of moves with the times as well in terms of AI and social media and TikTok and all the things that maybe we'll talk a bit later. But anything that happens, hotels can get involved in it because people love traveling. They love staying in hotels. So.
And that will not change.
That will not change. I mean, the hotel industry is the oldest industry, I think, going back 2,000 years or more. So, it will always be that people... I mean, the one thing I wanted to say for after COVID, for what we experience, is people just love to travel. And it continues. It's still booming, as you probably... if you're involved in the hotel business or your family has a hotel, go to the airport. It is packed. People love to travel. They love to stay in hotels. So it's a great industry to be in.
Very good. We'll talk about those, like, let's say, changing or like big impact years a bit later. But so your title, you know, always sounds very fancy, Chief Operating Officer. I always try to break it down a little bit and see what these people actually do the whole day. So maybe you can share not your entire agenda, but just a little bit of a glance into what a normal week looks like or what you usually tend to do as this big fancy title person.
Okay. So having 650 hotels around the world, I'm often traveling to, we have regional meetings to get engagement and feedback from hoteliers, because at the end of the day, the hoteliers are really our customers. They pay kind of an annual fee. So we get good feedback from hotels. But kind of describe it a day. First thing I look at is all the customer complaints, customer comments that come in. So we have a feed from TripAdvisor, Google Analytics, from our own quality assurance program. And then I just go through that to make sure that there are no horrendous issues. Invariably, 95% of the reviews are really good, so that's good. But to answer your question, I kind of look after quality assurance, make sure the hotels are of a good enough quality, hence the luxury in our name. I also look after development. So we have a development team around the world who sign up hotels. So we have about 2,000 applications a year to join small luxury hotels of the world, and we accept about 50, although last year we had a record year with 80 hotels. So we have a constant interest in joining our brand. So that's, we have a team doing that, and then I have a review session with the development team to see which hotels are wanting to join SLH. And then I also look after the account management team. So they're the people that look after the hotels to make sure they get the best out of SLH in terms of pricing and doing the marketing programs, do all the sales events. And then also finance reports to me. So we go through all the numbers. So the day is pretty full. I try to avoid emails as much as I can. Try to avoid Zoom calls. It's always best to talk to people. It's a very varied day. And that's what makes it so interesting.
So the part that you hate most are emails and Zoom calls, and the part you love most is the traveling and the meeting people.
And customers sometimes that leave really bad reviews, and the hotel gets upset, and you know that it's fake news. You know, they're trying on. Hotels seem to bring out a peculiar customer behavior sometimes from people. So, you know, they can leave a review, whereas if they have a shitty airline experience, they tend not to leave a review, but with hotels they do. So there's a huge amount of that kind of stuff that you need to go through.
Maybe you can tell us a bit more about the selection process and how it maybe also has changed over the a couple of years that you've been with the company already. So
yeah, so the key thing is the hotel has to be small. So that's the main selection criteria. It's actually, our limit is 200 rooms, but the average is 48. So the key thing that's changed over the last 20 years is hotels are getting smaller. So we often get applications from 9-bedroom hotels, 12-bedroom castles. A new phenomena is luxury boats, and also tented accommodation. So glamping, would you use that expression? So you'll see a more diverse type of accommodation. And then I think the other key driver difference is sustainability. So we started a sustainability collection about 3 or 4 years ago with very strict qualification criteria. But we can see more and more hotels meeting those criteria and being very interested in sustainability. A lot of hotels are in maybe their second or third generation, kind of younger generation, and they are very, very interested in sustainability, and it's not going to go away. So hotels have to do it, and they have to address the issues of looking after the planet. So I think they're the two main differences. One, hotels getting smaller, and B, the importance of sustainability.
And it has a beautiful name. It's called the Considered Collection, right?
Yeah.
It's a very, very nice name.
Yeah, so we have... Yeah, we have about 70 considerate collection hotels. Doesn't mean to say the other 520 hotels are inconsiderate, but those particular hotels are very focused on sustainability. And then we use the best practice of those hotels to share it with the other hotels in the portfolio. Because it is difficult in terms of changing your energy management, in terms of changing your water supply or putting solar panels or your swimming pool or replacing all the plastics in the hotel. It's a challenge, but you can use the best practice from our top hotels in terms of sustainability to help the other hotels in the portfolio.
That's actually very interesting. So do the members have a way of communicating with each other, or is that always through you and you kind of spread the knowledge and these best practices?
It starts through us, but we really support the what we call the community. So we have community meetings. So we have, last week I was in France. We had a meeting in Normandy with about 30 hoteliers, and we were talking about AI. We were talking about sustainability. We were talking about lots of stuff. So we use those meetings to share knowledge. But hotels, we encourage hotels to talk to each other. We have what we call an owner's club. So if you're part of the owner's club, you have to be an owner of a hotel, and then you get a big discount if you stay with other hotels. So it gets kind of encourages people to stay at each other's hotels. So we try to get hotels to speak to each other as well as through SLH. But SLH is kind of the enabler. And then we have an annual conference. This year's annual conference is in Tokyo. And again, that's a forum for people to share ideas and to basically meet. We're a people business, so it's a great way for people to meet.
And you just mentioned you have a lot of applications, way more than probably are suitable, let's say, for the collection. Does it ever happen that you or your team sees a hotel, stays at a hotel, and you guys want them to join, but they don't know about you yet? Is this a case that sometimes happens or never?
Yeah, we have a target of hotels. They tend to be leading hotels or really in chateau hotels, but there are also a lot of new developments happening as well. Lots of conversions of properties, lots of palaces in Italy, for example, are being converted into hotels, like the Palazzo Thalia in Rome. These are just amazing properties. So some hotels we do want to join SLH. So we target them. We try and persuade them that. SLH is a good partner for them. But I'd say 85% of new hotels come from applications from the hotel community in general.
Mm-hmm. And we talked about how with your company, the name is the program. And in your name, there's the word luxury. And maybe we can talk a little bit about how the perception of luxury has also changed. Maybe how your target audience or your guests that stay at your hotels have changed, and what you've kind of been able to observe because you have a very nice data pool that you can analyze.
Yeah, I mean, luxury is different things to different people. I think you probably had debates about this over the last 10, 15 years. So it's more about, again, this is a bit of a cliche, about experiences. You know, what do you experience when you go to the hotel? You go for the whole thing. So it kind of moved on from experience now to, we see a big trend in, and I really don't like the word, but wellness, inner sustainability. People really kind of want inner sustainability. They like to go to hotels that offer a bit of peace and quiet. So we've kind of developing a new collection called the Unplugged Collection. So, and again, a bit of a cliche, but, you know, put your phone away, don't come to the hotel. We can't stop you. I mean, some hotels put the phone, take it off you in reception and put it in the safe. I just think that's crazy. If you need the phone, you need the phone. But the general idea is you go to a place to relax. Maybe you do some yoga, maybe do some from the health club, some walking in the mountains, or working with the chef in a kitchen garden that the hotel owns, just to really kind of get involved in the culture of the location. I think it's really, really important. But so that we see a big shift towards sustainability externally, consider it collection, but also inner sustainability in terms of wellness, well-being, being unplugged, you know, just to have special time with your family and with your friends and yourself. I think that's and it's not just about luxury, it's not about gold fittings and marble, it's now about kind of feeling good about yourself and your friends and family, your inner circle.
And so your team kind of spots these trends, or like is aware of these changes, and then develops type of collections, so then you can put these hotels into different categories and make it easier for guests to then select, oh, this kind of hotel offers me this experience.
Yeah, it's quite difficult for us because, you know, we're small luxury hotels as well. Anyway, that is the brand. So we try not to develop too many sub-brands, but we have with Considerate, because it's very definitely sustainable hotels. We are doing with well-being, but it's really driven by supply. So, you know, the next generation of hoteliers are coming to us with retreats in Tuscany. They're coming to us with like the Arctic bath in northern Sweden, where it's sort of huts and rustic accommodation on the iced lakes, and you get a real kind of Lapland experience. And it's all due to the entrepreneurial spirit of the people in that location. So really, on the supply side is really important. The hoteliers, especially the younger generation, are coming to us with different concepts of hospitality, which for me, I think is really exciting and really refreshing. So,
and I remember very well when I was at EHL and I was doing my first internship at the luxury hotel in Zurich, I was working at the front desk and I was trained to spot mystery shoppers from affiliates such as, it was quite a big hotel, so it was unfortunately not part of the small luxury hotels of the world. But we were trained quite rigidly to spot these mystery shoppers, because they don't care if an intern is checking you in or if the manager is checking you in. If you don't oblige to the rules and the standards, then you might lose your membership. So maybe you can tell us a bit about the vetting process when they're already members and how you check that they're doing what they're supposed to be doing.
Okay, good question. So we inspect every hotel at least once a year. If they fail an inspection...
In disguise,
yeah. We have a team of mystery inspectors. They're all professional travelers. We don't pay them. They're all volunteers, but they are judges. They're airline pilots. We even have a general from the US Army who looked after Obama. We have a complete diverse range of people, but they love staying in luxury hotels. So the way it works is we pay for the first two nights accommodation for them to do the inspection. We have an app on the iPhone So they try to be discreet, but they can do the report actually on property, because otherwise you tend to forget. It's quite detailed. So they're all volunteers. If you'd like to volunteer, then I'm open to applications. But the key thing is they're independent. They are travellers. They're not professional inspectors, although we do train them. So they are harder to spot. So obviously a few hotels do spot them. The worst one is probably the Greeks in Greece, because you go to like Mykonos, and then they tell all their cousins and relatives who also have hotels in Mykonos and Santorini to watch out for this tall person with a white shirt and a jacket and training shoes, because he's an inspector. But we try and mix it up a bit. We have families, we have couples, we have different age ranges. So they basically inspect the hotel secretly, and then they do a 790 question report. It's on the iPhone. It's downloaded onto our platform, and then we generate a report with images. And the important thing is, it's not to catch hotels out; it's to help hotels. Every hotel has a bad day, so we try and make allowances for that. We try and help the hotels through it. But if they do fail, they get a second inspection within 6 months. And if they fail that second inspection, i.e. they've ignored the first inspection, then we'll ask them to, we will terminate their membership of SLH. So in that way, we do keep good hygiene amongst our hoteliers. We try and get rid of the bad ones. We help those that are struggling. And hotels do struggle with staffing or other issues. So as I say, we do try and help hotels, but if they don't listen and they don't change, then invariably they get ejected from the brand. So
get rid of the bad apples.
Get rid of the lemons. Or whatever lemons. Analogy, fruit, whatever fruit you want to say. Lemons, apples.
Very good. And we touched a bit about on this a few questions ago, but maybe you can also tell the audience a bit how you have a background in marketing, right? And it's a big part of, I think, the services that you offer to your members. How your approach has changed, the different media, also social media types that there are, and how you help the members to really use your platform, of course, but also, I don't know if you give them trainings on how they can also use their organic marketing skills.
So it kind of was, hotel marketing was more about kind of in the 90s, about early 90s anyway, brochures and rack rates. And I think the term rack rate came from, you actually put the price list on a rack. And then that moved very quickly in the 90s to the internet. And that really helped in independent hotels, because they could have their own website and then they could have their own booking engine from either us or SiteMinder or any other supplier. So they could have a good presence, global presence. But then along came Google, and Google changes their algorithms all the time. Doing your search engine optimization, your pay-per-click's getting very, very expensive. And then booking.com came along. And some hotels, 80% of their business is booking.com. That's a pretty dangerous situation to be in, especially if you're paying 20-25% commission. So it has changed, and I think it's kind of swinging back to companies like SLH, because we do offer help to hotels to do their own website. We offer our own booking engine, which can be tailor-made into the colors of the hotel. But we're seeing the growing importance of social media, which is a challenge for hotels. To do it comprehensively, and in China you've got a completely different range of social media, and in Japan and Korea, which is a big market for some hotels, even in Europe, that's a completely different skill set again. And then you've got TikTok and doing your photography. I mean, if you do a new photo shoot, please don't do it in landscape with nice glossy images.
I don't think you have to tell this audience
30 megabytes. Do it iPhone size and do a little video clip. Video clips of 15 seconds are just hugely powerful. As you say, you don't need to tell the audience, but it's amazing how many hotels still spend a huge amount of money on doing traditional, do it, but make sure you do all the social stuff as well. So that's probably the biggest change is social media as a channel. And also with AI in terms of being helping you with content, managing emails, personalization, doing one-to-one marketing, tying up your database with AI to make sure you deliver the right messages to the right people. It's changing, and it's a challenge for hotels, especially small hotels, to keep on top of that stuff. And also the technology, the linking the reservation platforms with the PMS. We have 650 hotels. We have 129 PMS systems, which is what, five? And then if Opera takes 30% of that, lots of different PMS systems, and it's very hard to manage and to have last room availability. So again, they look at us to help them on the technology side. But I'm rambling a bit. So the question was about rambling. It wasn't about rambling. It's about marketing, right? So the biggest change really is in social channels, and TikTok was going to get banned what 3 months ago, but it's really really strong. It's not just a channel for teenagers. Obviously teenagers use it to persuade their parents to take them to a nice hotel in the Maldives, but it's primarily also used for people to find hotels. Yes. It's probably more used than Google to some extent. So, and TikTok will be replaced by something else. Red Note, or I'm not quite sure what the Chinese one is, but there's always something to replace something else. So.
And the speed changes.
And the speed of change. Yeah.
You got your hands full by teaching all your members about keeping them up to date.
I mean, the biggest challenge in hotels, as we all know, is staff. And it's in terms of marketing. I mean, it's people are just getting younger and younger. I always said I would never employ somebody that was born in the 2000s, but it's
it's
almost up to 2010 now. It's almost these 16-year-olds who know far more about social marketing than I do.
And you need those skills.
You need those skills, and that's really is the future. And you can see it also in hotel ownership and development. People are getting younger and younger, which I think is fantastic.
Very good. And I don't want to talk about COVID too long, but I think it is always interesting to see how businesses reacted to it and what it changed for them. And you already shared a little bit about how you bounced back quite quickly, but maybe you can tell us a little bit about maybe the biggest lessons that you take from it, or your business, how you pivoted.
I mean, it's the travel business in general is always open to shocks. There's always something happening in the world. So you've got volcanoes in Iceland that really decimated travel in Europe for about 10 days because airplanes couldn't fly. We've had SARS. We've had Lehman Brothers collapse. That was probably the second worst one after COVID, was the financial crisis in 2008, 2009. That really decimated the travel business for luxury hotels. But COVID was universal. Everywhere apart from some countries, Sweden maybe, completely closed down. Hotels were closed down. So obviously we had to cut our costs dramatically. As we're a private company, and with our owners, we took the policy of not making anybody redundant. So we kept all our staff. We put them on, I don't know if you've got furlough in different countries, but we put everybody on furlough. We tried to keep the team together because the team was really important. And then also hotels, we had to give hotels a payment holiday because they had no cash flow. So we had to take a hit on the annual fees. There was no commission because there was no bookings. So it was a tough time, but just by really rapidly working together as a team, cutting your costs, we got through it. And the key lesson is people love to travel. I say it again. It's just simply amazing how it's bounced back. And average rates are just, I mean, you probably think average rates have gone too high. And we're seeing a bit of that in some locations like London, where there are probably also too many new luxury hotels and they're charging too much money. You can see occupancy being dragged down. But people do love to travel. They love going to for leisure. We've seen huge increase in bookings for the Maldives, for the Caribbean, where Americans love to go to. Japan is booming. It's probably the hottest destination in terms of travel to Japan. And the yen, the exchange rate also helps, which is good. But I think the biggest lesson is how strong and resilient the hotel business is. And people just love to travel. It's kind of a conflict with sustainability. You kind of don't want people to, you know, travel too much or maybe have a longer stay. So we've been encouraging longer stays in our hotels rather than race around. But it's hard. It's hard to change customers' travel patterns. But personally, I try to travel a lot more by train. You know, you go to the airport and the planes are full. And I live in London. London to Milan, an average ticket is about £350. It's just crazy. But there you go. People pay it.
And I mean, you also, with your collection, you are very much geared towards the leisure traveler. So I think that's the market that came back the strongest and the fastest. Compared to business travel, let's say, I don't think your exposure is that high.
Yeah, we do have business hotels, and you know, some of our top hotels are in New York, London, Paris. But you're right, it is leisure, resorts, country houses, spas, or going to a city centre for leisure, such as in Venice or Paris or Rome. And I think pure business type hotels with big conference space probably do struggle a bit. Mm-hmm. But the leisure business, particularly from America, from the United States, mainly from the Eastern Seaboard, you can kind of pinpoint New York, Boston, and then maybe a little bit from Los Angeles and San Francisco, but it's a bit further to go. The demand for USA, for Americans to travel to, especially to Europe, is just phenomenal. Any Rome hotel, 70% of its business is USA. And the important thing to share is that the majority of that business is still booked by travel agents. So the internet, everybody thought the travel agent would die, but absolutely not. It's travel agents starting to use the internet to make bookings rather than their GDS systems in the travel agents. But travel agents is our business, 80% of our business. I'm sure if you talk to leading hotels of the world, 80% of their business will be via travel agent too. So as hoteliers, you really do need to appreciate the work that the intermediary still does. And it's not just about online. It's also about, you know, visiting these people who really do look after their clients. We have a range of film stars and celebrities that come to our hotels, and they're looked after by these specialist travel agents. So
that is crazy, because you think, you know, with social media and the internet, you have so much more power as the guest in deciding where to go, how to book. You can do everything yourself if you wanted to. So I am quite surprised to hear that it's that high of a percentage that still goes through a travel agent. But it makes sense. You trust a person, right? And if you've traveled with them for years and years and years, why would you stop that relationship?
Absolutely. So you trust the person, your favorite travel partner. You hope that they keep up with the latest trends, the latest hotels that you can go and visit. And rich people are busy people. They don't have time to. They've got a multi-generational booking in, the Fiji Islands. Our hotel Rawassa, it's one villa on an island. It's a long way from Los Angeles to, and you've got to go via New Zealand and that. You've got to organize, and mother's coming from Toronto, and it's just a nightmare. So to do online. Mm-hmm. So that's why travel agents do a really, really good job to look after these wealthy people. And, long may it continue. And it hasn't changed. Maybe we're doing something wrong, but I think it's the travel agents that are really good. So,
and you already mentioned it before, 2024 was a record year for you in terms of signings. You even signed a catamaran into your portfolio. I think I read that somewhere. Tell me if it's wrong or right. Is it correct?
It's correct, yeah.
Very good. And more than half of your hotels are in Europe. I think Italy is the strongest market. Is this? Can you share a little bit about how that came to be? Is this just because there are a lot of small family-run hotels in Europe? Or is this just kind of where it all started and you're the most known?
Kind of a combination of all of those things. So just go back to the catamaran. It's called the Hermes, nothing to do with the fashion house, but it's a catamaran. It's based in the Galapagos Islands. It's a catamaran because it doesn't have doesn't sink too far into the sea, so it doesn't damage the environment in the ocean, and it runs off biofuel. So there is a sustainable angle. I don't want you to think we have motor yachts in our portfolio, but in terms of the balance, we do have more hotels in Europe, primarily in Italy, in Spain, in France. These tend to be places which are kind of family-owned properties. In the United States, properties tend to be owned by asset managers, REITs, or a private individual, but they're represented by a management company. So it's a slightly different relationship. We tend to deal with family-owned properties in Europe, and they're primarily in Italy, in Spain, in France, and in Greece. We also have a good portfolio in the United Kingdom. For some reason, we struggle in Germany. We'd love more hotels in Germany. So if you know of any hotels in Germany that'd like to join SLH, we do have an incentive program. Italy, I mean, it's just amazing. I mean, and we can't stop the inquiries. So Tuscany, we have to turn hotels down, which in a way is a shame. We don't want to have too much
cluster
hotels in places like Florence or Rome or Venice. I think there is a kind of a limit to the number you can have. But there's a huge supply coming through of palaces or museums that are being converted into. I don't know whether they get government help or whatever, but
it's booming.
It's amazing. You can see that across France as well. The chateaus are being renovated, and in Spain too. You've always had not the Pousadas, that's Portugal. What's the other one in Spain? The castles in Spain, the old not Pousadas, what are they called?
I don't know. Any Spanish students in the audience?
Anyway, it's an amazing collection of heritage places, and heritage is a big part of our collection. So that's one reason why Italy. But the key reason is the customer. So as I said, United States, US people, Americans love to travel to Italy. They love to travel to Spain. They love to travel to Greece. But it's really the Americans that are driving the sort of hotels and the number of hotels that we have in Italy.
Perfect. Second last question. You're doing really well.
Thank you.
You've been with the company for a very long time. I think almost 20 years. Not quite. Okay, I'm rounding up. Anyways, a long time, which is a good sign, because I think nowadays people tend to switch jobs and companies quite often to advance their careers. So I would love to hear what made you stay and what you do now that you're in a management position to keep the good people in your company. And don't say culture, like just culture. Elaborate a little bit.
I wasn't going to say culture, but... Okay. That's about two questions in one. Why I get confused. So the first question was, I've actually worked for SLH for 17 years. So big rounding up. I think early on in the career, you need to decide what's right for you. You've got to do what you love, right? You've got to have fun. Don't be forced into doing something you don't like. So if you don't like working for a hotel, if you don't like working for a company or an asset, if you work for a finance company, you actually want to work on property, then change. Don't be afraid to change, but have fun. I think that's a key thing. But once you find something you do like, and I like working for SLH, it's a privately run company, and who's not to love luxury hotels, right? So, it's just a great subject matter, and you meet some amazing people, some great entrepreneurs, some great hoteliers. I think also they're called innkeepers, which seems quite trendy as well. That's also true, innkeepers. It's just a great, and it's always changing. In terms of people, it is very hard to attract really good people. I don't want to talk about politics and Brexit, but it did make life difficult in terms of attracting the right talent. We want to attract younger people for the reasons I talked about before, that, in terms of marketing, you need younger people. We're really focused on women. I'd say it's 50-50 looking around the room, but on some panel sessions with some of the top hoteliers in the world, they're all men. And I just think that's wrong. So we do focus, about 60% of our employees are women. So, you know, we also have diversity programs, inclusivity. But part of that is really to make sure that women are correctly represented in our company. To keep people happy, you've got to pay them. You've got to give them a bit of working from home, which I hate. But you've got to be flexible. You've got to make – I think the key thing is to make a fun environment. You need to treat people with respect and just to make sure they have a fun time.
Mm-hmm. Very good. Last question. I always end my episodes with the same question. And it's actually really fitting now that we're here. If you were your 22 young self, exactly, and you could go back in time and you could give just one recommendation to the audience and the students in this room, what would be your number one tip for life, for their careers?
Tip for life. Wow.
Yeah, I know it's a very heavy question, but...
I think before COVID, and I'll probably say this to my daughter as well, so I'm not being hypocritical, is to just get your priorities right, just to make sure that you do the right thing in the right order. So, you know, don't go nightclubbing if you need to hand in a paper the next day. But, I mean, that's old stuff. I'm sure your parents have told you the same. But since COVID, I think the key thing is the F word. So you can tell me what the F word is? Shall I tell you what the F word is?
Please do, because...
You've got to have fun. And you've got to be with your family, and the family also, without sounding corny, is also the people that you work with. Just make friends with people at work. Just have a really nice, fun atmosphere at work and just basically have fun in everything that you do. Because hospitality is fun. You meet some amazing people. You meet some crazy people. You meet awkward people, but that's also part of life. You've got to be able to... handle awkward people, run to the fire, as I always tell my staff. If you've got a problem, don't run away, just run to the fire, try and sort it out. So does that answer your question?
Yes, perfect. Okay. Richard, thank you so much for being here. Thank you for your time.
No, thank you very much. Thank you.
And now I think we have time for two questions or no? Okay. Very good. Look at this. I love an audience that actually has questions. Okay, number 13.
If you, Richard Hyde, could create the ultimate dream SLH hotel anywhere in the world, where would it be? What would make it unique? And what over-the-top luxury experience would you offer?
Wow. Okay.
Wow.
She can do my job next year.
That's going to cost a lot of money. It would be small. I love small hotels. About 15 rooms. I'd like to be welcomed by the owner that's got a passion, that's got knowledge about the property. I'm a great fan of, a huge fan of Italy. So it'd probably be in Italy, maybe Lake Como, maybe it's George Clooney's ex-residence that he's turned into a hotel. I'd like, simple, cuisine that's, heavily vegan. I don't know if you touched F&B on this in this last few days, but we recommend about 25% of your menu should be either vegetarian or vegan. That the ingredients are grown in the garden, or they come from a local market. That I can cook something maybe with the chef, or my daughter can go into the kitchen and cook something. There's a great hotel. I'm rambling here, but there's a great hotel in Stockholm called Etem, and they allow you to go into the kitchen, and you can even take the dog for a walk. So that kind of spirit of being part of the family, I think, is really good. And I'm getting old, so I need some pampering. So the hotel should have not a spa, but some health, a good gym with some good equipment, and then somewhere to relax and swim, and maybe a sauna.
Lake Como. You can swim in the lake.
I could swim in Lake Como, yeah. But
thank you very much. And then table. I don't see the number 12.
Thank you so much for the valuable insights. As someone who has undergone mystery shopping from both American Express, Fine Hotels and Resorts, and Forbes, how would you say the mystery shopper process is different from SLH to these already well-established shopping like processes? How would you say it's different for smaller hotels compared to bigger chains like the ones that Forbes and FHR usually feature?
Yeah, answer that a few ways. So the Forbes mystery shopper, it's about £15,000. So we don't charge hotels anything like that. So that's the first thing. Our mystery inspectors are professional people. They're not professional inspectors. So they do travel around. They get to know all the latest hotels. I think the key thing is our rapport is unique to SLH. So if the hotel doesn't have a doorman, then you don't get marked down because most small hotels don't have a doorman. If you don't do a wake-up call, which I think is on Forbes, you don't get points knocked off for that either because you've got an iPhone. And who has a wake-up call?
I think it's one of the most overrated.
You must be crazy, but it's on some inspection reports. And then we've also added sustainability questions. So we tend to be a bit more flexible because we own the platform. And the inspectors kind of are kind of independent. So I think that's probably the main difference. But it is similar. To be fair to your question, it is fairly similar. But it is, we think ours is tailor made to small hotels, and it is by independent inspectors who aren't part of our company. So I don't know if, does that answer your question?
Okay, one more question. Table 7.
Table 3 as well?
Maybe if he's fast, then.
Okay, thank you. May I ask, like, I know the SLH do the corporate with the Hilton, I think, yeah? So this kind of big group, why Hilton, not Marriott? Because I think the Marriott also have a lot of, like, the luxury collection, this kind of brand. So why Hilton, and why do you want to cooperate with this huge company? Yeah.
That's a great question. I'm glad you reminded me because I should have said it.
And I actually had it in my questions, but I had too many questions. So very good. You can also do my job next year.
So we did, just to give you some history. So we had a partnership with Hyatt, with World of Hyatt program. So, and we had that for 5 years. And then World of Hyatt, and Hyatt in their wisdom decided to buy Mr. and Mrs. Smith, which is a UK-based company, very similar to SLH. So we had to get a divorce from Hyatt and get married quickly to Hilton. So, and Hilton had been a great partner. And it basically gives an independent hotel. So you keep your name above the door, but you get access to this amazingly powerful loyalty program. So Marriott has Bonvoy, Hilton have Honors, and it's nearly 200 million Hilton Honors members, billions of people that go on Hilton.com, the app, and their voice center. So if you're part of SLH, you go on to, you're featured on Hilton as though you're a Hilton property, but you're only paying for what you get. So the reason why we did it is to get exposure, distribution, global awareness for our hotels to a magnitude that they can never match. Even paying pay-per-click with Google, there's just no way you get the same level of exposure as you do with Hilton. But also from Hilton's point of view, their luxury brands, Waldorf Astoria, Conrad, LXR, their global distribution is fairly limited at the moment. So they chose SLH because they can, the Hilton Honors members can use their loyalty points to stay in our hotels. And we provided like 400 additional luxury choices for their members. So they're pretty happy with the program as well. So it works both ways. We love the distribution it gives to our hotels. And they love us because of the extra choices for their Hilton Honors members to use their points in luxury hotels. And it's a very, very good match. Like in Switzerland, there are 20 Hilton hotels. There are about 20 SLH hotels. And SLH is, there are no luxury Hilton brands. There's no Waldorf Astoria, there's no Conrad, there's no LXR, as far as I know, in Switzerland. So if you want to come to Switzerland as a Hilton Honors member, you now have a much bigger choice. So it's been, and it's, we launched it in July, and it's just been, I mean, you're talking millions. It's been an amazing success. But thank you very much for that question, reminding me what I should have said
Very good.
So anyway, thank you. Was there a question from number five?
Do we still have time for a very quick question? One more. Okay, very good. Let's go. Number three, right?
Hi. Well, thank you for your talk, first of all. I would just like to ask, because of course, luxury is defined differently in different countries. So when you do take over an hotel, do you make a lot of changes to the operations, or do you more, how do you see that?
We do have a number of basic luxury standards, and we also give new hotels a copy of the Michelin inspection report so they know what they've got to aspire to. But invariably, the hotel owner, you know, they, or operator, they know what they're doing. So invariably, I mean, sometimes they teach us, especially on some of the new stuff that's coming along. But we do, when a hotel wants to join SLH, we do send somebody from our development team. They have to visit the hotel. They have to do their own inspection. They have to understand the motivation for joining SLH, because it's not for everybody. If your key market is Russia, or if your key market is China, you're probably better doing it yourself or joining some other company, because our sweet spot is USA, UK, Germany, Canada, Australia. If your key market is from those regions, then you know, SLH can do well for you. So to answer your question, we don't tend to tell hotels what to do, but they have to meet a certain minimum standard.
Thank you so much for having us. I think that's all the time we've got. Thank you, Richard.
That's it for this episode, everybody. Thank you for tuning in. Don't forget to share your thoughts on this episode and everything else that is going on at Smack with us by checking out our website at smack.media, or connect with us on LinkedIn, YouTube, or Instagram. We'll see you next time.